Matt Bubala Show on Radio 720 WGN. So we're going to continue talking a little bit now about the Kennedy assassination and where we stand here 52 years later. November 22nd, 1963, of course, was the fateful day. Judith Vary Baker was very interesting last hour. So now let's get to somebody who is, you know, taking more of a third-person approach to it, who's just been looking up the records and the information and shooting down the theories that have popped up over the years. Dave Perry is just one of those researchers. He joins us on the phone right now. Hey, Dave, how are you?
Very good. How are you?
Good. I imagine this is a very busy time of year for you.
Yes, usually. I try to lay low, though, actually. Usually, normally. I live outside of Dallas, so I'll go down on the anniversary for about an hour and see what's going on down there, but I kind of stay away from all this stuff. I'm more interested into the cerebral end of it.
You are not, so you shoot down a lot of theories, although you yourself don't say that, you know, it was exactly Lee Harvey Oswald, one gunman, one, you know, everything. You don't necessarily say that that's for sure what happened either, right?
Well, I take a different approach to it. Over the years, and I've been at this since 1976, I'm an ex-claims adjuster, and I decided I would look into it as though I was looking into a fatal automobile accident. And about 20 years ago, my company, the insurance company I worked for, moved me from upstate New York down here to Dallas. So I was close enough where I could get into the middle of a lot of this information and start interviewing various people. And up until that time, I was pretty much kind of anti-Warren Commission. We had the House Select Committee who said there was a conspiracy, but they didn't say what. So as people, particularly people in the area, started coming forward and saying, well, I know this or I know that, I started investigating and actually interviewed quite a few of them. And over a period of time, most of them came up short. But underlying all this, I tell people, you don't have to you can have a lone gunman and you can have a conspiracy. The proof of that is the Lincoln assassination. You had John Wilkes Booth, but you ended up with about six co-conspirators, of which four ended up being hung. So what I've always looked for is there something out there that motivated Lee Harvey Oswald? Because technically the record shows I cannot get around him based on all the research I've done as being the primary shooter, no matter how hard I try. And believe me, just like a lot of people, I've tried very hard.
All right, so let's tackle a couple of the things that I'm sure you've looked into over the years. The whole triangulation, there was a shooter behind the grassy knoll, there were several shooters. That theory, do you believe that there was just one gunman?
As of right now, I do. I was involved in a couple of episodes of Unsolved History where we actually brought people into the grassy knoll area and actually all over Dealey Plaza with rifles with laser scopes. And the angles don't work. That's the primary problem. Most people who hear this from non-experts. And I'm not an expert by any way in ballistics. But when the true ballistics experts get in there, they say basically there's a cone that leads back to that sixth-floor window.
What about the whole, the head moves back and to the left, the theories that, you know, these things are not all plausible. The trajectory of that bullet going through several people, all these different things that one of the other bullets did. What about all those theories?
Well, the again, you know, that you can get on any issue. And, I mean, whole books have been written on frame 313 of the Zapruder film. And I've kind of gotten beyond that. The business of the magic bullet, though, a lot of us have looked into, including myself. That's Commission Exhibit 399. And it turns out, if you actually have a limousine, as we did, that mimicked the limousine Kennedy was in, you find out that Kennedy is raised up and Connally is in the jump seat. So what the general public hears is somebody saying, well, how can a bullet go into Kennedy's back, come out, make a 90-degree turn to the right, make a 90-degree turn, and go into Connally's back? And originally, as a layman, I thought, well, that's absolutely impossible. But when you look at an overhead shot of what goes on in the limousine, they line up. Now, I have some problems with, you know, the magic bullet. It's really not a magic bullet. If you take a look at it, it's deformed. And some ballistics experts say it could happen. Others say it couldn't. So it's one of those things that I just say, well, I guess it's never going to be resolved to anybody's satisfaction. So I move on from that and I start looking at, well, what did this person say about it, and are they accurate, particularly a lot of the people that were involved at the time.
Okay, so I got to jump to this real quick. Judith Verybaker was on the show last hour, and she claims she was Lee Harvey Oswald's mistress. She claims a lot of different things about Lee Harvey Oswald, and she seems very sincere and, you know, all of these things. I look at her skeptically because all of these theories just, I don't know, it's hard not to look at everything skeptically and then think one thing's really going to be true. What I know you know about Judith Verybaker. What's your general take?
Well, a while back, there's a fellow who's out of England, a fellow named Nigel Turner. Some of your listeners may have heard of him before. Years ago, back in the 1980s, he did a film called The Men Who Killed Kennedy. And it was shown over here in the United States, and it turned out that a lot of the material that he had was actually fake. Matter of fact, it was so bad that he ended up being censured by Parliament over it. He claimed that there were three Corsicans that were the shooters, and eventually they found out that all three of the people that he named were in other locations. They weren't anywhere near Dallas. Well, back in the, I guess around 2004, 2005, he came back with another one, The Men Who Killed Kennedy, which ended up on the History Show. And Judith had a segment in that. And what I did is I looked at her segment and tried to correlate that with an interview she gave years ago on Black Ops Radio. And in the end, I found out that as time has gone by and people have questioned her, she's modified the answers to the questions, particularly about her relationship with Oswald and the Catholic Church. As a matter of fact, I have a web page on my website that's devoted to what she said at various times and what actually goes on within the Catholic Church, because her claim, I don't know if she's still maintaining it, that she and Oswald were going to get divorced and get married by a corrupt Catholic priest, whatever that was, and run away together. And her original story, they were going to run away to someplace in either Central or South America, a resort, and she changed her story on that when somebody found out that the resort that they were going to had not been constructed.
Mm.
So the other thing, too, and we've asked for it many times, is we would like to see just one picture of her with Oswald. And her answer to that is, well, they were so circumspect and so cryptic, well, we made sure that we never had a picture together. The other problem is she is fairly recent on the scene. She's come on board with this over the past 10 years.
Right.
And she now runs her own symposium. She had one, I believe, in New Orleans a couple of weeks ago. And that's another issue I have with a lot of these people, is that they run these for-profit symposiums, and they get the same people to show up to tell their same questionable stories. So I'm more interested in the historical record and finding out what went on. Although there have been cases where I have been hired to chase down stories.
We're speaking with Dave Perry. His website is davesjfk.com, davesjfk.com. So as he said, he likes more the historical record and finding out what is fact and fiction. So let's get more into that next. Matt Bubala with you on Radio 720 WGN. It's the Matt Bubala Show on Radio 720 WGN. We're talking about the JFK assassination. It will be 52 years ago. On the phone with us is Dave Perry. Davesjfk.com is his website. And after our hour with Judith, thought it would be good to get to somebody who's a little more, you know, Dave, you mentioned that like Judith is running these symposiums, the same people come and tell the same stories. And I'm imagining that the people who come to these events, I mean, I'm fascinated by this, so I guess I could see myself coming to them, but I would imagine there's a certain crowd that is really eating up every possible conspiracy theory, so they're attending these things over and over and feeding a minor economy.
Well, actually, that's true. As a matter of fact, people, particularly here in Dallas, refer to it as a cottage industry. There's a couple of folks that are regularly appear in Dealey Plaza selling their own books and magazines. As a matter of fact, the city of Dallas had to kind of hold it back because some of them were getting so exuberant that they were literally chasing the tourists out of the plaza with their theories. Mm. But just so you don't get the wrong impression, I mean, I believe a lot of these people are sincere, but a lot of them almost need the adulation. And if they can come up with a link, and of course, Judith's link was, which is true, is she worked at the Riley Coffee Company the same time that Oswald did. Now, I've got her book, and I don't believe in her book she mentions that Oswald worked in a different building from her. And this is the kind of material that we're constantly looking for, to check in to see if... And actually, I've gone into most of these to try to prove that the individual who's making the claims is, in fact, accurate. But what happens is the historical record gets in the way of most of them, and they end up being some place where the other party couldn't be, you know, that sort of material.
I imagine that also, being that it's 50 years later, people that are retelling these stories or trying to remember things probably aren't remembering correctly. So do you think sometimes maybe they are telling a truth, but they're getting a lot of it wrong? Because, listen, Dave, I don't remember what I bought at the store last week, let alone 40 years ago. You know what I mean? So I wonder if a lot of it, or if some people are really telling the truth about what they know, but all the dates and facts and things like that, since they didn't have that blazed in their memory or written down somewhere, they're going to get that wrong, and then we're going to naturally discount that, because if we can't, you know, corroborate a bunch of facts with it, then that is going to discount their story.
Well, the other thing about this, too, is they've also been bombarded by 50 years of various books and movies, and eventually you can almost reach the point where you can truthfully confabulate that you were there or saw something when you were there that in your mind is absolutely correct, but it didn't happen that way. I recently had an episode with a person who was a witness, absolutely no question about it, that all of a sudden mentioned to me, you know, I think I saw somebody put a rifle in the back of a car down there when I was walking around. So what we did is we went down to Dealey Plaza. I had him describe it. And most people are totally unaware of the amount of film and still photography that took place in Dealey Plaza. And what I was able to show him was a photograph that was taken by a fellow named James Alkins, that where he said the car parked at the exact time he saw it, it would have had it been in Alkin's photo when it wasn't there. And he kind of looked at me and said, boy, I'm beginning to get confused, and I was there. So it happens.
Yeah.
It really is.
That's interesting. That's really interesting.
What I wanted to do, though, is tell you, you know, before everybody thinks that I'm the complete naysayer. The thing that has always interested me, and you and your listeners may get to hear a little bit more about this in the coming years, is Oswald's trip to Mexico City. There is a core group of about four of us that have been investigating that trip, because that is the most interesting thing, because there is a lot of conspiratorial activity going on in Mexico City involving the CIA and Lee Oswald. And it's taken us years. I mean, the House Select Committee didn't have the information. Slowly but surely, we've been able to get this out of the Records Review Board. But the CIA is still withholding somewhere between 500 and 1,000 documents related to this episode in Mexico City. Oswald went down there. He visited the Cuban embassy. He visited the Russian embassy. He applied for an in-transit visa at the Cuban embassy. They refused him. He applied for a transit visa in the Russian embassy. If you read the Warren Commission report on page 777, the Warren Commission says the CIA did not know that Oswald was ever in the Cuban embassy. Well, we found out to be not true. They actually had tape recordings because they had a telephone intercept system called Lenovoy that was monitoring every phone call that was going in and out of the Cuban and in and out of the Russian embassy. They also had a mail tap program called HT Lingual out of LaGuardia Field in outside of New York City, where they were looking at every piece of mail everybody was sending to and from the Soviet Union or to the Soviet Embassy in Washington, D.C. And we know now that Oswald was on the HT Lingual list. So if a real spy story, and I'll give a plug here. There was a fellow by the name of Newman, John Newman, who wrote a book many years ago called Oswald and the CIA, where he managed to get some of the classified documents. Well, that book is now a little bit of ancient history, and we've got more information than we did before, and it reads better than a Le Carre spy novel. Just thought 4 days that Oswald was in Mexico City.
Now, I don't mean to bring Judith back into this, but since I spent some time with her, she claims that he was there because he was supposed to hand off what was going to eventually be used to poison Castro.
Well, the problem there is the documents that were being held secret, and his own letters belie that story. When he came back and was living over in Irving, visiting Ruth Payne's house over in Irving, Marina was staying out there. He was coming out on occasion on the weekends. Ruth Payne had a typewriter, and he typed the letter to the Soviet embassy in Washington, D.C., in which he complained that the Cuban embassy was not treating him very well when he was trying to get his in-transit visa. And we also believe we have the transcripts of the phone calls that he made while he was there. We think that the CIA is withholding the actual audio tapes. And all of the conversation that Oswald had within the Soviet embassy and within the Cuban embassy, and there were many witnesses to this. I mean, it's not just one person saying. There were secretaries and counsels and everything that met with him. There was a big historical record that was put together actually by the Russians to a certain extent. Some of the people that interviewed Oswald when he was in the Russian embassy eventually wrote books about their experience with him. So that's one of those places where she's possibly confabulated this, but we can show classified documents that took us years to pry out of the government that say, no, not, that's not the idea.
However, Dave, if she's right that he was there to carry something that was going to kill Castro, that wouldn't be revealed in anything, right? I mean, we wouldn't be able to get that information very easily either, correct?
Oh no. She pulled that out of a story that was discovered by the church committee. That's another thing that a lot of them will do. They will take something that has been historically factual, and they will introduce themselves into the picture. Mm. Oh no, there was a CIA plot to kill Castro. There's no question about that. We have all the documentation on it. As a matter of fact, there is the possibility that, well, they were going to do several things to kill Castro, most of them pretty crazy. They knew he liked to skin dive, so some people were working on an exploding clamshell. I'm not joking. There's documentation for this. They were trying to develop a chemical powder to put in his wetsuit that would make his beard fall out because his beard was a symbol of the revolution. These were actual CIA documents explaining this. And allegedly, there was a person over in a hotel room in Paris, France, receiving a chemical vial of a poison that they were trying to get into Cuba to get somebody to poison Castro. And a matter of fact, one of Castro's mistresses, a woman named Marita Lorenz, who's still alive, claimed that she was one of the people that they had were trying to get to kill Castro, but she got cold feet. So the story of that, of the government, actually the CIA, trying to kill foreign leaders, that's a fact. It's just, from my standpoint, she's taken that story and she's put herself into it.
Okay.
That's really what's going on.
That makes sense. All right, Dave, I got to take a break for the news. Can you give me just a couple of more minutes? Because
sure.
I wanted to get to, okay, hold on 1 second. Dave Perry is with us, davesjfk.com. So as he's saying, we need to find out what really happened with Oswald in Mexico. When will we ever find that out? What does Dave think? We'll find out when we do. We'll find out after the news. Matt Bubala here with you, Radio 720 WGN.
I'm leaving it all up to you.
It's the Matt Bubala Show on Radio 720 WGN. We're speaking with Dave Perry. Davesjfk.com is his website, and we're talking about all the theories, and some plausible, some not so plausible. But one thing Dave has latched onto is Oswald, it is known, spent 4 days in Mexico City and was at the Cuban embassy, was at the Russian embassy. He believes that the U.S. has a lot of documentation on this. You said between 500 and 1,000 pages of documentation that has still not been released?
Well, we feel between 500 and 1,000 pieces of material. Some of it we believe is, documents. But we do know that people listened to tape recordings of his voice when he was in Mexico City. We know that at least one tape was taken out of the CIA station chief, Wynn Scott's, safe upon his death. So we also have Wynn Scott's unpublished manuscript in which he talks about all the following they were doing of Oswald.
Okay, so tell me what we know from that tape being taken out. Where did that tape go? And in this manuscript, did he talk at all about anything else related to Oswald and Kennedy?
What we're kind of beginning to figure out is by the time he left, like anything else with the Kennedy assassination, it's pretty complicated. He was literally trying to get back to Russia. Even in his letters that he wrote before the assassination to the Russian embassy, he was beseeching them. As a matter of fact, when he was in the Russian embassy in Mexico City, we know he was begging two Russian consuls, a fellow named Kostikov and a fellow named Yatsov, begging him to give him a visa to the Soviet Union because he was telling them he didn't like it in the United States. And, of course, that's come out when, after the Cold War and Gorbachev, we got released some of the KGB records. So, like I say, these bits and pieces are coming out. So what happened was, all of a sudden, when Oswald realized after a couple of days he wasn't going to get anywhere, he wasn't going to go to the Soviet Union, he wasn't going to Cuba, he hopped up on a bus and left Mexico City. And the CIA lost him. All of a sudden, he was on the loose somewhere in the United States, and they don't know where he was. So we believe they started impersonating him and calling the Russian embassy, acting like they were calling from the Cuban embassy, to try to find out where he went. And, of course, the Russians didn't know where he went. They just literally had kicked him out of the building, as the Cubans did. And there is evidence of the CIA intercepting messages coming into the Cuban embassy, and then calling the person and protecting the embassy staff and meeting with them. I don't know if you know. I mean, like I say, this is pretty complicated. But I think if you Google the story of a fellow named Eldon, E-L-D-O-N, Henson, H-E-N-S-E-N, from Athens, Georgia, you will find he called the Cuban embassy to tell them that he was interested in helping Castro. CIA Mexico City intercepted the call and sent a CIA agent to meet him in Mexico, pretending to be with the Cuban embassy, got all the information, and turned it over to the FBI. So when he went back to the United States, they arrested him.
Well, that's interesting. So they had so they had ways to get to things. So
this
information, audio tapes, different things like that, will it be buried forever, or will this ever come to light?
Well, the thing about it is, you know, the interesting thing is a lot of the people that are kind of on the fringes of this, Judith and her friends, they all denounce the Warren Commission for a big cover-up. They never mentioned that the House Select Committee investigated this, and they thought, well, maybe there's a conspiracy, but we can't figure it out yet. Well, then, eventually, they came up with the Records Review Board in 1992, and it's ordered the release of all documents by October 26, 2017. And the only holdout is the CIA. So a lot of us have got our calendars marked for October 26, 2017 to see if they will pony up what they're supposed to do under the federal law. President John F. Kennedy Assassination Records Collection Act of 1992. It's an official piece of legislation.
Has every other agency already turned over everything that they have, or are some others holding out as well?
Generally, what we found out is the stuff that they were withholding was embarrassment to them. Not that they were part of the plot. The classic was, you know, there's a fella out there who claims the Secret Service was involved. Well, if you take a look and start reading the records, you kind of find out, well, the Secret Service was really a little bit inept. You know, they were kind of cocky folks. They figured Kennedy was, you know, kind of the Lancelot and all that. And they really didn't protect him securely. So what will happen is somebody will write a conspiracy book and they'll say, well, here's the proof. But remember, the Secret Service had trouble with Reagan, Gerald Ford. Recently, they had the big shakeup with the Secret Service. So what happened in the case of the Kennedy assassination, yes, a lot of documents that we now have were put away because they turned out to be embarrassments to the particular agency, be it the FBI or the Secret Service or, you know, whatever it might be.
So just under 2 years from now, we're supposed to get the rest of these documents, the CIA having the bulk of them.
Right.
What's your guess on how easily they release those documents? Do you think that they will defy those orders, try to get around them somehow, try to get a presidential pardon on that or something like that, or will they be forced to hand it over?
Well, a lot of this has been dealing with how many people are going to be alive at the time.
Sure.
And also the other, there are not me particularly. I kind of on the fringe, and I kind of look for the records and try to, you know, get them. I used to try to get records through Freedom of Information, but we've got a couple of folks out there that really have been on top of this. Well, matter of fact, John Newman is one of them. I say his book is outdated, but he hasn't given up. He's another one that's waiting to see. And what I'm hoping is that within this material are some of these actual audio tapes. We have the transcripts. We know what the transcripts look like, which people have denied that exist, but the CIA had to pony those up. But I would love to hear the actual recordings.
So
of,
wait, you,
of these phone calls.
You have the transcripts of the phone calls? You just haven't heard the audio?
Yeah, just don't have the audio.
So yeah, is there anything interesting in the transcripts themselves?
Well, the interesting thing in the transcripts are the exchanges that, like, for instance, the Cuban consul is having with the Soviet consul over how legitimate Oswald is. But then there's a whole series of transcripts that don't make any sense where, at least in my mind, it's, well, the CIA lost track of Oswald, and now they're trying to find out what happened to him. So they're calling, impersonating Oswald to the Soviet Union, the Soviet embassy. And the man on the other end of the phone, who's supposedly Oswald, says, well, I was over there with my address, but I don't remember it.
Mm.
But the Cubans do. Well, my question is, you don't know where you live? You know, so I'm going to give another plug here, too, for those of your listeners that are really interested in this. There was a long-term, very high-end, good friend of mine, researcher here in Dallas, died a few years back by the name of Mary Ferrell. F-E-R-R-E-L-L. And Mary turned all of her materials over to this group, and they have created an online website. You can get the parts of it for free. You can also subscribe to it, you know, for a nominal amount, $35 a year. And I can guarantee you, if you go in there and you start looking for Mexico City transcripts, they will be in there. For the average individual to take a look at.
Interesting. All right. So
over the years they've
leaked out.
And also, before, I mean, that's another one. And of course, and again, like I say, it's a real spy novel. It's I don't need the, you know, the Secret Service accidentally shot him, the Russians did him in, or all that kind of stuff. This Mexico City deal is just absolutely fascinating, and. Although it's out of date, that Oswald and the CIA, which I think you can still get through Amazon, has got a lot of the old documents, but some of them are redacted, you know, where they black out the material. Well, once in a while, one will come out where they forgot to redact it, and we get to see what they had to say. So it's rather interesting.
All right, real quick, Dave, because I got to let you go, but
okay.
What's your guess? What's your bet? I mean, you've looked at all of this so many times over the years. What do you think the real truth is?
I don't know. I guess that's the toughest thing for me because of what went on. It's almost like I know that one of the people that Oswald met with in the Russian embassy was part of a department in Russia that was responsible for assassinations in the Western Hemisphere. It's a well-known fact. His name is Kostikov. And I've always wondered what kind of conversations went on between the two of them. And what was Oswald's mindset when he came back to the United States?
That's a question that maybe will be answered if those documents are, in fact, released in 2 years. Dave Perry, Dave's JFK.com. Orion Samuelson has the morning show next on 720 WGN.